with Paul Daner, Mark Salafo. Kick off the weekend, all right. It's the Growler Friday Show. It's Hootay Night.
All right, welcome into the first ever edition of Hootay Light. Paul Daner Jr., Mark Salafo are here, and you're wondering, what is this? What is this? Mark, what is up?
Not a lot. I'm excited for the start. The start of things is always fun. It's exciting. It's fresh. Yeah. People are going to hate me.
Can you feel it? I can feel it already. I really can't. I want to start. We have a trailer up. If you want to go listen, where I kind of talk through the concept of the Growler and what it is and a little bit of what this show is. But the theory behind it is I've done a lot of podcasts. I actually would get wildly concerned actually adding up how many hours of Bengals podcast talk I've done and how many shows with how many different names over the years. But the one thing I've always thought would be great and always felt like was missing was a Bengals show that is designed to be lighter, that is designed to be funnier. And I know Mark Salafo. I hope you do. If you don't, Mark, I mean, you can give a little bit of background, but we come from like such weirdly similar paths. You worked with Mo Egger, great friend of the program, of course. You did a podcast with Mo.
Yeah, that's true. I forgot about that.
And you even were like in sports writing at one point.
I know. It is weird that I did, like, that was my first path was sports media. I started off, even in college, was like freelancing for ESPN. I saved Mo's career. I was his first producer. You wouldn't even know his name anymore if it wasn't for me steering that show in the right direction at the beginning. Yeah. He'd be a nobody now. I don't even know who would be on the air in his place.
Maybe you.
Oh, God, that's terrifying. Well, I'm very thrilled that it has worked out for him. I much prefer the stand-up comedy lifestyle than I did the sit in a studio for 3 hours every day lifestyle.
Yeah. And so this is even more perfect because, you know, you're a Cincinnati person. You've been here. You know, it's not like you're unfamiliar with the team or anything like that. You're there. That's such a great perspective. And, you know, you're on the tour, right? I mean, like you're constantly scraping up new nuggets from the comedy world and sports is something that you've used a bunch. And then you and I both have kids. We're surrounded by many women. You have three daughters. I have two. It's a lot.
Yeah, I do want to mention we have kids separately. The way you said that made it sound like we have kids together, so this just makes sense.
It's more of a
Brady have our
Bunch
own families.
Meshing. Yeah, sorry.
Here's the real theme of the podcast: two families coming together, five daughters. Here we go.
Here we go.
That's a lot of daughters.
It is, but so I'm excited about this. I think it's going to be a ton of fun, and we're going to talk plenty of Bengals here. Like this is not about us just telling jokes in front of Bengals logos. It's Bengals is the theme. We're here to talk about it, and there's gonna be plenty of stuff to dive in, but the point of it is really that we want you guys to drive the show. This is going to be kind of a Q&A show. You guys every week can be sending in your questions to me on Twitter or over, you know, pdaner@theathletic.com to Mark on Twitter. You can, we have all that stuff. You know, you can go and send us your questions, your Bengals questions, things that you think are maybe funny Bengals questions, or just weird stuff about why we were possibly attempting the Brady Bunch Family Merge podcast. And so I don't care. We don't really care. We want you guys to drive it, and we'll do what we think will be as entertaining off of where the direction that you take us. And we're going to try to do that every week. And I think that'll be a fun way to go forward.
I would like to encourage everyone to send their questions to me, because I'm not afraid to ambush you with anything they have. If they send them to you, you might have a little bit of prep ahead of time. You've got extensive media training from working in the industry. So we'll see how you get, you know, how you handle it when you just get ambushed with unfiltered reader questions.
Yeah, it'll be like being on the street, or like anytime you're out in the bar and someone's like, hey, wait, I need to talk to you about how much I truly despise TJ Houshmandzadeh or something. Like you never quite know where it's going to go, especially the later into the evening.
How much do you get that?
Not as often as you might think as far as Bengals questions. I think people truly feel guilty asking me Bengals questions because they know like how much I probably talk about
that. Yeah.
Yeah. So I think people are very considerate, which is stunning. If you looked around our world, it's very surprising.
Well, that's a real credit to your audience, because I've been around Mo before and I remember from working with him how often we'd be out at like a church festival or a function. And, you know, maybe people would hold those conversations a few hours longer than you would want a random stranger to come up and ask you your opinion that you deliver for 3 hours a day, five times a week. That seems like a frustrating lifestyle.
Which one of my favorite things about hanging out with Mo, and I use that term loosely, is that if someone comes up and asks him something and it's even tangentially Bengals, he will step back and he'll be like, Paul Dana from The Athletic, everyone, and just point out that I'm right here to try to pawn it off. So I always appreciate that.
I appreciate it switches into radio voice at those encounters. If somebody does come up to him, you can hear a shift in his voice where it's just like you're tuning into the station. I love it.
Yeah, no doubt. So if you're listening to this for the first time, this is Houday Light, and you know, you can go to, if you want to please subscribe, hit the buttons here on YouTube, go to thegrowlerpodcast.com. You can see all the spots to subscribe, whether on Spotify, whether on iTunes, all the places where you go search The Growler, and you'll be able to find it and hop on. This is kind of the new addition to the portfolio that you're used to. Show with myself and Jay Morrison, show with myself and Mo and Dave Ninemitz. And this will be our third show that we do every week on Friday, that you guys kind of steer and direct and see what happens. And it's going to be a ton of fun. So looking forward to it. So make sure you guys are following along as we kind of build it, and it's going to evolve and grow as we go, as most things do. We're just kind of test flighting. So we'll see how it goes. Send us your suggestions. And as long as those suggestions aren't like, you shouldn't do this.
Yeah, I know. You know what, though? Like, I'm prepared for that, too. Anytime there's something new, people are going to hate it. They're used to you and Jay. They're used to you and Mo. So I'm sure that, like, you know, you might get a few of that pushback against my presence on this show. But we are going to have fun. It's going to develop into something really fun, I think, for all sorts of football fans. I've got some Q's here ready. Do you have some A's? You ready to talk A's?
I'm full of A's. I'm full of A's. let's fire it off. What do you got?
All right. So this is the first one that I saw, is who's one player from the 22 draft that could make an impactful leap this year that nobody is talking about?
Well, it's hard because, you know, a lot of people are talking. Like, there's just a lot of talk, and you know, coming off the combine last week, where I felt like there was no person or topic about the Bengals that was just not beat into exhaustion as you go through kind of morning to night conversations with Bengals and football people and other beat writers, and it's just like it truly feels exhausting. I will go with one that is like one that people should be talking more about, and they just don't. Is the one that they should be talking about most, and that's the first round pick. Like, people are not talking enough probably about Miles Murphy, and the fact that at the end of last season, the significant jump that he took opened a ton of eyes, and he was a frustrating player early last year. He was a frustrating player in camp. He was a frustrating player through the first 8 weeks of the season, but what he did in his limited opportunity after that, you started to see his, you know, a young developmental project like he was, you started to see the traits show up as he started to figure some things out. And by the end of the season, and now their plan is based around adjusting for the fact that they're finding more snaps for Miles Murphy. They're not asking him to go earn more. That's going to be part of it. They are creating more. You know, you're going to see Sam Hubbard kick inside. You're going to see more snaps where Murphy gets in there when Hendrickson needs a play or two off. You're going to see those percentage numbers jump up into probably the 40s and 50 percentage marks, whereas last year you were just getting him in there you know, for 15 plays a game or whatever. And I think that is the one that not enough people are probably talking about, considering how much everybody's talked about.
Yeah. And what's interesting to me is just with all the Sam Hubbard was more injured than we realized talk, it makes it seem like that might be harder for Murphy to get snaps. But if they moved Hubbard inside, then of course you could get a lot more run from Murphy.
Yeah. Well, I think if he's every day, every third down, every passing down, and he's spelling Hendrickson on some rundowns, if they feel comfortable with that, or maybe there's early drives where he's just in there for all three downs as you get going, just to keep everybody fresher. That's good for everybody, especially as Hendrickson and Hubbard do get later on. And there's gonna be injuries. And if you have Sam battling something like he was this year, I think they're going to be far more likely to just lean all the way into Miles playing and not feel like you force Hubbard to be out there, quote, on one leg, which is how Anarumo referred to how Hubbard was playing the last month or two of the season, yeah. Which you're right. That was a very popular topic of people defending Sam Hubbard and pointing out, like, this dude was the ultimate warrior last year. No, you know, it makes me just want to shake the ropes when I even say ultimate warrior. I didn't mean to go full WWE, but he really was. In the fact that he was playing through that, won people over, spoke more to why they loved him, and there was a lot of effusive praise of Sam and what he gave despite his injury last year in Indy.
Yeah, the Miles Murphy, it's going to be an interesting storyline to watch. Following up from that original question, given that Murphy was in the 23 draft, what about the 22 draft class? What is there a player that nobody's talking about that could make a leap this year?
Oh, so I botched the question. Look at me go.
Hey, listen, it's only the first one of the Q&A podcast. First
question of the entire podcast series, and I heard it incorrectly.
In your defense, you talked about how many A's you had, and you've got A's to questions that aren't even asked. You're just ready. You got A's for days.
This is A's for days. It's a great way to start. The 22 draft class, I mean, they're not talking enough about. I think Cordell Volson, just because, again, there was a real feeling that he started playing more comfortably like himself at the end of last season. He saved his job in a lot of ways, was the kind of the feeling that I got in a lot of the Volson talk this week. And since the season ended, was that what he did once he started relaxing. And I think Frank Pollock brought up the play where Chase Brown had like the second fastest time by any ball carrier, that long touchdown at home, and Volson running right near behind him, and pointed that out as like, you know, he was giving him a hard time. Like, where the hell's that speed been? Where's that at? And, you know, it's one of the fastest any offensive lineman has ever run here. But his point was, he felt like that was something where a point where you saw him start to just let it loose and relax and not be afraid to be more himself and show that and not be so tentative. And it seemed like he played that way. He certainly, can improve as a pass protector, really in both, but in those areas. But I think they felt like that was the jump they were waiting for to set up. Okay, you can become a real dude here in year three and not force them to go looking for a guy who could maybe have to compete or take his job next year.
In a season full of questions, like having one fewer significant one there on the line is probably a pretty good spot to be in for him. What about Cam Taylor-Britt? Do you think that could be another one that people aren't talking about, that he could make a leap into being an even better, more reliable player at that corner spot?
Yes. Well, the thing is, no one's talking about Cam because that's just assumed at this point. Like, Cam is perfectly set up to be a true Pro Bowl caliber, all-pro caliber, if he can be number one shutdown. Like, that – everything he has done and the growth he's shown at every level to this point and where he's at suggests that's one of the things that they feel like they most can count on with next year's team, is that Cam is going to, I mean, I got to think it might be the only person that wasn't discussed this week, because it's just so assumed and known within them. It's just not even a question. It's shutdown number one over there wearing number 29, Cam Tillbert's going to be a real guy next year. I think that's kind of set in stone almost.
And I'm obviously from a very different perspective. I'm coming purely from a fan perspective. You know, you're covering the team on a daily basis, but it does seem like for a team that's going to be looking for maybe more locker room leadership, that he could also help evolve more into that role too. He just seems to have that sort of character.
His nickname is Juice. He has an entire line of merchandise with the little juice emoji, and sure, there are shirts. Like, he is going to be, he is the absolute energy replacement. He's that driver guy. Now, I don't know if that means he's going to be viewed as a captain. I think that's kind of a different idea, but he is going to be the energy that they count on to push them every day. And when your stars, when your best players bring that, it's so easy for it to filter down through the rest of the team. And that's what they've done a really good job, is finding stars that work the hardest, that bring the most energy, that care the most. That's helped kind of be a part of the culture. And I think that's what they realize they have in Cam. And that's why they've tried to kind of elevate him at every opportunity.
And this sort of leads into our next question that we have. And this one is going to probably infuriate a lot of fans. Paul, be honest, with the Bengals' track record of drafting for next year, what are the odds they draft a cornerback in the first round this year following the principle of best player available? I mean, that's got to be a real possibility, right? Even with the desperate need in the trenches, do you think that it is possible they still take a corner first round?
Yes, I do. And that will probably make people mad. I felt like the one surprising, I don't know if surprising is the right word, but the one kind of maybe interesting, maybe eyebrow raising. I think there's like a, so we've got like stunned is too harsh. There's an eyebrow. It's two eyebrows, not one. One is more quizzical, right? So, but yeah. I think it was an eyebrow raiser to hear, you know, really the undercurrent of corner and safety, with corner more so than safety. I think you could have seen it, but how openly they were like, you know, Dax Hill is not necessarily going to be our guy. And I have a story up on that on now on the Athletic, if you want to go read more kind of about everything that was said there. So they're clearly open to that. Probably not as much of the draft pick, but I think that's more of, they're looking for a veteran. They need more veteran savvy and intelligence and communication back there. But, you know, if they don't go that route, you know, the idea of adding another corner is never out of the question. Lou Anarumo didn't give the most shining review of DJ Turner's rookie year. The line he used was that he said he stole it from Mike Hilton, but that DJ Turner didn't hit the rookie wall. It hit him. He ran into it. And it's like, this was not, it was just, he was kind of toast. He would kind of just, it was too, the season was long. He came out so fast, and a guy who just couldn't quite handle the length of it. And that's very typical. I think they're banking more on who he was the first half of the season than the second, but he wasn't good enough. And that was apparent, and he has to be better was kind of the resounding sentiment from Anarumo. So when you have that out there and you have a draft where maybe the best player on your board is a corner in a league where you can't have enough of them, and the secondary not being great was a big part of your issues last year, I think it's in the realm. It's not impossible. If they're true BPA, if like, you know, BPA, right? It's like, this is BPA season. Everybody's got to yell about BPA. If you truly are that, I don't necessarily think they are. I think they like to think they are. Then corners, absolutely, because there's guys that will be there at 18 that could definitely be the best player on their board and could play immediately.
Yeah, and it's one of those things where, like, of course, all the talk is going to be about, you know, the offensive line, the defensive line, tight end. Everybody wants the splashy first-round draft pick, but that is a premium position in the NFL. And there are, like, if you look at some of those mock drafts, there's a lot of, you know, good caliber corners that seem to still be around in a lot of those. So they could be in that situation. And I guess, you know, there probably is still a reason to make that move. They still probably need more depth there anyway. Especially with, you know, if you one injury to Cam, and then all of a sudden that back, the defensive backfield has a pretty big hole. Yeah. It's got to be like, I'm sure they'll make some offseason moves there regardless.
Yeah, there's going to be, I mean, there's going to be pieces. I think it's, I think, you know, the line used was everything is wide open. And I think that's 100% the truth.
Another big story, obviously, were the grades from the players. And this leads into our next question. How bad does food need to taste before it gets an F minus? F minus food. How do they help the food stuff?
I don't know. We walk by it. We're not allowed to have any.
Is that for your own health and safety? They're like, you can't handle this. You're not properly trained. Your body will shut down. You got to be a lead athlete to handle this F minus food.
We get it 3 days a year. And that's during the draft weekend because there's nobody else there. They have to make it for the staff that's there. So they don't mind allowing the scum of the earth media to be able to walk through the doors and eat from the buffet or eat, have. And I think it's good. Like, I don't know. I don't have any problem with it. I think the issue is that they don't always serve three meals a day. They don't have it on their off days. I never got the impression that it's awful. A lot of guys do get delivery that shows up and you'll see them walk into the security office and coming back with like, you know, eight bags of to-go food from Lucius Q or wherever. And so you see that, but I never got the impression it was F minus. I just didn't, the minus, has anybody given them an F? Like, is that a thing? I just thought, you know, I asked our good friend Jay in his good old days in Hamilton High School or in Fairfield if he ever had gotten an F minus before, because that it just feels like an unnecessary amount of aggression on the failing. You already failed. How can you like extra fail?
Yeah. Once you hit that fail level there, you can't really go anywhere else. The minus does seem punitive. It seems cruel. Yeah. It seems like it's there for the humiliation factor. I don't know that I've ever even had an F minus meal before. Like, I can't even think in my own personal life what I would have given an F, even in grade school, like the square pizza, I'll give it a C minus. You know, I'm not even throwing F minus on the square pizza.
I don't want to take, I'm not taking shots at school square pizza here.
I mean, what, can you think of a time in your life where you've had F minus food?
It has to not show up. That's the only F minus I would ever get, is like just the food doesn't show. Now, I had a. Some would say a struggling run as a breakfast server when I was in college as like a summer side job at the Cincinnati Marriott Northeast. Shout out Northeast up on Field Zirtle. And there was a couple of times that some people came in after their Sunday church service looking to have a nice meal at a nicer breakfast place. They didn't get any food because I screwed it up. Okay. And they just left. I deserve the F minus more so than the food did. But, you know, don't order the omelet when there's a buffet. I'm not prepared for that.
Yeah, and you can't handle that.
But I will say, I mean, I've not quite had it. You would have to get actually sick while still in the restaurant, I would think.
All right. Moving along to our next question. Paul, if you die prior to the Bengals winning the Super Bowl, would that failure be noted in your obituary?
What?
This is a fun question. What I like about this is because a lot of times obituaries are, you know, written by a family member and then you pay for them to show up in the newspaper or whatever. So in this scenario, this could potentially be a family member that is dragging you for the Bengals failure.
Well, I mean, what are they be like? All his criticism of Marvin Lewis dragged the Bengals down, and it was part. Why do we have to go to me dying to talk about questions in a mailbag?
That also, why your failures? If you're dying in the mailbag, at least make it happy. Talk about your successful podcast network that you launched and all this great content you're putting out, and maybe not the Bengals' failure to win a Super Bowl before you died. Also,
I'm not responsible for this.
Right. And if they're going to put that in there, at least say, give you a long run. Let yourself live a happy life in this dream world where you're responsible somehow for the team not winning. It's a very dark question. Now, I will say, again, if you have dark questions, you can send them to me personally. I will ambush Paul with them. Also, going back to F Minus Food, we are a new podcast. So if you're a restaurant, you want to become a sponsor of the show, I've got no problems throwing F minuses to all your competition on the show. I will absolutely, you know, go that route and change my, I've never had an F minus meal before. If you want to go on the attack, sure, we could do that as well.
Yeah, absolutely. I like the idea of asking people if they want to be sponsors, not by saying we'll talk about how good you are, but strictly just negative, like political campaigning, essentially, you know?
Yeah, you know what? Podcast sponsorship, it can be whatever we want it to be. It can be fun. We can do attack ads on your competition, probably, you know? We're just showing our commitment to being good partners with whatever business is coming to us. Yeah. No holds barred. We'll go on the offensive.
No, we're not going to show up and do a live event at your restaurant. We're going to picket in front of your competition across the street.
We are going to do a live show trashing your competitor from
Seinfeld
their parking
style. Yeah. No bagel, no bagel, no bagel, no bagel, right? what else we got? Is there anything else about my impending doom?
I would love more questions about your impending doom because it's a fun topic. Although yeah. I hope it doesn't happen selfishly. I'm excited for our new podcast together. I hope we do it for a long time and your impending doom would change those plans. Yeah. Our next question, if you had to pick a song to describe the upcoming Bengals offseason, what would it be?
Okay. This one we did preset because I needed to do some thinking. So I think this question, this would be good. Pick a topic and ask for a song, but I would change it to a song. Just anything from your best of the 90s playlist. And I could pick my favorite best of the 90s playlist song, whatever you feel like you're trying to get summed up. For this one, though, I'm going with The Distance by Cake. It's just, there's a lot of visions of like Duke Tobin behind the car, you know, just trying his damnedest to get this team to the end, churning and burning. He yearns for the cup, going the distance, going for speed is kind of what stands out to me in that, you know, they're close. They are close. They're trying to go the distance, go the distance. More 90s references, of course.
I wouldn't mind some more speed out there. It'd be fun to watch more speed on the offense.
Top, like one more speed receiver to go along with T. Higgins and Jamar Chase, or you know, whatever it is, can be what puts them over the top. So I'm going Cake, The Distance, which I would play here if we wouldn't like immediately probably get some sort of violation. Fine.
What do we? I know. Yeah. Episode one. You can't get the violation for episode one. Yeah. Maybe on episode two, yeah, let's just play a full Michael Jackson concert in here. Yeah. Just 75 minutes of that. That surely won't come back to bite us at all.
No, not at all. Not
if
at
I had all. To pick a song saying to describe the offseason, for me personally, from my standpoint, it would be It's 5 o'clock Somewhere. Go with the Jimmy Buffett. Because here's my thinking is like, it doesn't matter what the Bengals do. A few drinks, I'll talk myself into it. Is Joe Mixon going to be here? Great. I can talk myself into more Joe Mixon. You know, after a few drinks, if they don't solve the trench issues the way I think they should, yeah, you know, make the margarita big enough, I'll get on board with this season no matter what. I saw Joe Burrow go to the Super Bowl with no offensive line. So, yeah, a few drinks and I'll be able to talk myself into whatever this offseason has.
That's actually my favorite part of draft season is everybody gets so opinionated on one side or the other in the lead up. But once the Bengals select that person, they have officially talked themselves into how this was the way they should have gone. This is great. And this is definitely going to work out. There's maybe like three picks in the last 10 years that weren't talked into. And even then it was like, yeah, but you know what? I'll give them a chance. And, you know, John Ross had his detractors even in the moment. I would say Jackson Carmen pick wasn't universally loved, and that one kind of maybe proved correct, but there were Carmen people talking themselves into it, you know, at one point or the other. So it happens. Talk yourself into it season is one of my favorite parts, though, where we need to we need some old takes exposed to get people and how they really feel and what happened before.
Although I do think there is a downside to us preaching that message of, listen, it's all going to be okay. You guys will be happy with it no matter what. Because that whole approach of like, just chill. We're going to be fine. Yeah. Kind of takes away from the day-to-day interest that would really serve a new podcast like ours. And, you know, the articles you put out on a regular basis. If you were just... every day, I've got 1,400 words here. It's just chill written over and over. It's going to be okay. It'll be an interesting season no matter what because of Joe. So, yeah, keep concerning yourself with the minutia, I guess.
No, absolutely. Well, I'm fine with it. That's a great attitude for fans to have. I won't go that way necessarily, but I think usually you can see it. Like, I feel like decisions are so rarely so bad. It happens. But I mean, look, this fan base, and there you can go find me trying to talk myself into Irv Smith last summer. That I wrote that. There was a you know what, in OTAs with no pads, like he looks like he could be pretty athletic and do some things. Maybe Irv Smith can be it. There was a very long period of time where everyone was talked into Irv, and then it took like what, a game and a half?
And yeah, it was not long. With
the Irv Smith experience.
What's nice about it is because the Bengals, at least from me as a fan, they've got their foundation. They've got their quarterback. I think when I look at that first round, if you're looking at a mock draft, there are players that I think would give me that visceral negative reaction. I don't know who's going to take JJ McCarthy, but I've watched him a little bit in college. That's not the most exciting quarterback to build your team around. You know, it feels like a Desmond Ridder to me where it's, he seems like he could be good, but is that really going to excite your fan base and kind of turn your franchise around? Taking quarterbacks in the first round,
he better win a lot of tilts. All right, so there's our questions that you guys sent in, but also we should have, you know, if you've got a question, I'll let you take a spin at it here for me, Mark. What are you?
It's a cute. Show. I got Q's. You got A's?
Q's versus A's. Let's go.
This is what I want to know. Just from your standpoint as a reporter, what is one story that you thought, oh, this is going to be a big deal? Everyone's going to want to know about this, or a topic you thought would really resonate with Bengals fans that ended up not being a big deal?
I'm going to go specifically off of last week in Indianapolis, not necessarily in a big picture that it wasn't a big deal. I thought last week, over the course of the week, the T. Higgins trade discussions would become a big deal and be talked about, and we hear some rumblings, and there really wasn't. Like, there wasn't a lot of talk about people. You know, I think there were questions, but there was a lot of, I don't think the Bengals are going to do it. And I don't know that anybody's going to pay their price. And this team isn't interested. And that team isn't interested. I thought there might be more buzz about potential tag and trade deals just because of how obvious it was. And maybe they were just super on the low and everybody's trying to be incredibly discreet in that regard. But anybody that any of the conversations that I had or people that I talked to said it was pretty quiet, and it was kind of surprisingly quiet, maybe a little bit last week. That doesn't necessarily mean anything. Some of the biggest moves they've ever made have just popped up out of the blue at the last second. You know, Orlando Brown last year in free agency being a good example. So you never quite know. But that would be one from last week that I thought would be a little more talked about. I obviously thought in the big picture it was talked about, since I spilled an obscene amount of words on a 4-part series that a lot of people gave me busted my chops a little bit about in Indianapolis. Listen,
I enjoyed all 4 parts. I think it should have been like the Star Wars movies, and there should just be like a new 3 parts.
Can I write a prequel? So often. An oral history of those first 4 seasons? Yeah.
Right. And then maybe some spinoffs, like do something about his high school teammates, where they are now, what they're up to, what their relationship with him is like. Are they still following their old buddy? That sort of thing. Maybe a cartoon animated version of the T. Higgins drama. And, you know, whoever replaces him someday, whenever that is, whether it's this season, next season, a few years from now, then you can do their 4-part series. Although I'm not a big Star Wars sequels guy.
No. I think what was it? Everybody Loves Chris. Wasn't that about Chris Rock's like childhood or whatever? We just do a whole like a 5-part you know, documentary on T. Higgins in third grade. And that's yeah. kind of part of it. Like, we're just hard spin, you know?
Didn't The Rock have a TV show like that, too? That yeah. was like, oh, Young Rock or something?
Young
of
Rock. Course,
the most interesting part of you is not yeah. when you're a very famous movie star that people are talking about maybe running for president. It's what were you up to in grade school? That's what we want to see, Rock.
Yes.
Although if you're listening to this, yeah, Rock, we'll take you as a sponsor. We'll plug your movie. You'll be our favorite, and every other movie star will be an F mine. I'm pretty sure The Rock listens to podcasts.
Yeah, and he's got his new football league. He's, you know, he's like he's part of the XFL takeover here. So maybe they can come. We'll promote your league here, and we'll talk about how the NFL kind of stinks. The NFL's really F minus competition compared to this new spring league, really taking over. Maybe
that's
take
a good
some shots
point.
At the old world league.
If he pays us enough, yeah, we'll become an XFL Bengals related podcast where it's yeah. just anybody that
everything
played
else
for the Bengals
is
in the XFL. Yeah. I do have another question for you. This is a little bit more off topic. Joe Mixon made news a few weeks ago with his clown emoji, and I know that's been talked about. Here's something that I want to get your opinion on. Obviously, you know, the circus had a great run in American culture for many decades. They got canceled, like plenty of institutions do. For them, it was their mistreatment of the animals. So now the circus is coming back, and I heard a radio ad, right? And it was all like, the Ringling Brothers is back. And this time, no elephants and no clowns. My question for you, what happened to the clowns? The clowns were never part of this. Were they mistreating the clowns? What happened to the clowns?
I feel like there was a lot of kids that purposely don't go to the circus because the clowns are too scary, right?
Okay.
So they're saying, look, you can bring your children. The freak show clowns are not going to be there to scare your kids, or, you know, they're not going to follow them to the bathroom, you know, or you're going to see them in a dark hallway. They're not going to be standing out in front, waving down the alley. Like, you
Did
can
I
come,
miss
don't
some
worry,
stories
no
about the
clowns are here.
Are clowns following people to the bathroom?
They might be. I don't know. Well, if there's enough of them and they got to go, at some point they're following somebody in. Are they not?
Well, maybe the reason they got rid of the clowns is the clowns got tired of being transported in those tiny cars everywhere, you know, 20
yeah,
to a car.
Yeah, that's tough.
Do they have tiny bathrooms then? Maybe that's a problem too. They've got to go. Maybe they all have to file into a tiny
you
little
think since they do the tiny car thing, they also use like they all have to get into one stall?
I don't know. I don't know what the zoo was doing to these the zoo. The I don't know what the circus was doing to these clowns.
Yeah. Well, I mean, look. You got to feel there's going to be a need for some kind of union representation or something for them at some point.
So you really think the clowns are too scary for the kids? It's not that people stop bringing their kids to the circus because there's way more entertainment options for families and kids in 2024 than there was in 1971 or no. whenever the circus was, you know, really popular. It's definitely that the clowns are too scary.
Strictly clowns being too scary. Yes, that's my thought. That's my opinion. I, you know, have never really actually funny story. When I worked in a newspaper in Key West, there you find characters everywhere, and but usually not in a professional setting. At the actual newspaper was a lot of people, career journalists, people with master's degrees, managers, except on weekend evenings. The person that you know that plated the paper, so it took your final print and pressed it and then sent it to the printing press, which is like, you know, they usually look it over, make sure everything looks okay, and hit the final button. Was someone who was an actual clown for their other job, sketch the clown. Okay, so late enough on a night, if he had a gig that night. As when you went in, you've been working all day, send the paper, go back to take one last look and make sure it's ready to go. He would be sitting there in his clown outfit looking back at you. Paint, big shoes, you name it. And you'd have to just be like, oh, Christ. Like, am I really going to have an actual conversation about American journalism with a clown right now on a Saturday night at 11 o'clock in Key West? And the answer was yes, you actually did.
I can't think of they already have a reputation, clowns do, for being sad. I can't think of a sadder clown than one that has to leave a job to go work at a newspaper at 11:30 on a Saturday night. That might be the saddest clown story of all.
Yeah. Tears of the clown, right? Yeah, it was. I mean, he at one point, there was one time my coworker actually shared a cab with him after work back up to like to the uptown area wherever he was going to do his clown act, which I don't even want to know what exactly that entailed.
Clowns in Key West are probably a little different anyway.
Yeah, there's no question. I wonder, he probably is really famous now, and I don't know it. Like, if you go to sketchtheclown.com, I mean, are we going to see somebody who's like just crushing it, you know, and he's got a big business with like other clowns in newspaper industry? It might be the only way to save the newspaper industry, to be honest, at this point.
We should get Sketch the Clown on the show. Let's get it. Yeah, make it an interview.
Let's go.
Along with our Q's and A's, obviously, there's another way to get people involved. That's dipping into the comment section, the most fun place on the internet. You get comments on your stories, on your Twitter, all sorts of those. So we're going to look for some of the best ones and throw those.
Well, you are. Yes. I do not read the comments. I sometimes do, but I've found that to be a very bad space for my own mental health often. So if I'm feeling good, I sometimes will go in there. But if I'm fragile, if I'm in like Sketch the Clown level of sadness, I will never go in there. So that's a big part of it. You can go read the comments and tell me what's either going to make.
And I will say, I love the comments. I will read every single comment. And it is crazy. I've had some stand-up stuff go viral on Instagram over the last month. There was like three different clips that went over 1 million views. And the comments on Instagram are awful. I even think TikTok is a more supportive place than Instagram for viral videos, at least. But yeah, so if you guys want to leave crazy comments, I will find them. I prefer to find the negative stuff on Twitter. If you want to go negative against Paul, I don't want the Athletic has a higher caliber commenter. So
that's true.
I don't want any of your bosses to necessarily get exposed to a bunch of people that are trying to troll you with bad comments just to make it onto our show. So the first one that I found, so obviously the Bengals' new field, big deal for football fans of the Cincinnati Bengals, which is a terrible way to phrase that. The field will no longer resemble Branch from the movie Trolls. How do you feel about that?
So having seen Trolls before, I had never thought about this before, and I did have to end up going to the Trollpedia, which goes through the troll universe and who everybody is. And I was like, oh yeah, you know what? That's not a bad point. It was, I mean, I openly took a number of sarcastic shots at the field because I feel it has looked busted for years. It's just nobody has all those ugly, dirty black pellets anymore. Like they show up so clearly over the white lines, and it's just, it looks bad. It's gotta be a better way, right? And it's the worst field in terms of this slit film stuff that players hate the most. It just seemed so obvious for so long. I care. I mean, the player's health is important. I'm here to talk about that as an important thing. It mostly looks dirty. It does look like Branch from Trolls. It just looks like it needs to be swept at all times. It looks like, you know, my basement looks when I haven't been down there in too long, you know, just to like give a little bit of attention. You know what I mean? After it floods a little bit, now the seepage comes in. You got to get the wet dry vac out. Like maybe they just needed a lot of wet dry vacs. I don't know, but I just always thought it looked like the dingiest. And then I'll go by Western Hills High School. Their field turf looks pristine. And the ones that the Bengals pay for at high schools around town, it looks way better than their own turf. And it just felt like there had to be a better way. So I'm excited for everyone that's sick of looking at the dirty carpet. It's going to be like going from 70s shag to like a new, like, you know, wood, all wood surface. I'm hopeful, very hopeful for this. And I appreciate the Trolls reference.
What concerns me is, so I'm not familiar with the Trolls reference, right? And there was that link to the Trollopedia or whatever it is. So I clicked on that to do a little research. And the first thing that comes up is a pop-up that says, are you an adult or are you a kid? And you have to click one of those. And I thought, you know what? Anything with this kind of pop-up is probably not a space where I need to be, period. So is Branch like a dirty troll or something? I'm worried about Branch the troll.
I just think it's his hair on the like weird coloration of his face. And there's like some greens and some blues. And then there's a lot of black. That was my assumption. And by the way, if you would have clicked, I felt like it was, if you click, I'm an adult, it should have been the same thing as clicking I'm a kid on like the Coors website, you know, where that, like, you know, well, then we don't,
it just takes you away.
You should not be here scrolling through Trollspedia and looking at what's going on.
Okay. So Branch does, he's not like a dirty, he's not like the pig pen of trolls or something.
No,
that would notoriously the dirty one.
Yeah, I think that would be the older demo would appreciate a pig pen, I'm guessing. Yeah. But I just,
oh man, I think I just put myself in the older demo.
Yeah, well, we'll have to talk to, I'll have to ask Brad W. a little bit more about that and see if he wants to further explain. Send me more if you want to further explain the Branch on Trolls. That was my interpretation.
Comment that I found, this is from Josh S. You can imagine whatever Josh S. you would like, or you know in your own personal life. His comment, why does Frank Pollock still have a job? Would give anything for a media member to ask Zach Taylor that question this weekend at the Combine. Would give anything.
Anything. Now, look, if there's an actual deal on the table, we can talk. Okay. Like if you, but you're going to have to, there's a lot of future money that could potentially be lost by a lot of people. If a murder occurred, if I was fired, if I was strangled, or people just are being chased in the streets. I'm not totally sure, but so I think there's going to be some future grievances involved in that. You're going to be in the multi-millions if it's anything. So I don't know. Here's the thing. I don't need, and nobody does, has any worth to them as a reporter, to combatively ask Zach Taylor why one of his assistants still has a job to his face in front of the cameras to try to put him on the spot. Because guess what? It's not hard to find out that answer if you just have a nice conversation about it when all that stuff isn't around, okay? And the fact that he still has a job tells you that that's why, because he believes in him enough that he's still around here. I hate that it always has to be viewed as being combative and destructive to do your job correctly. Like, you can have the information. I can tell you they think he is a good coach. They think that he has done a good job with the offensive line and the pieces that he's been given, and they have a very clear feel for the identity he's looking for and what that should look like. Fans really don't like him. I get it. He's in the crosshairs right now. I don't think it's as bad as fans. The sentiment that I see a lot is regarding the offensive line. But yeah, that would have been a pretty aggressive move to just go, why does your assistant still have a job? It's not how any of this works.
Yeah, that just nukes your relationship with probably everybody inside that building. And yes. What's crazy to me is, like, I don't know. I get that sports has become a hot take factory. Yeah, that's what drives ratings. That's what drives conversations. And you know, I know there's a lot of people that play that game, right? But that's still crazy for somebody to be like, this is your job, Paul. You go in there and you ask them point blank, just a gotcha style question. That's not fun. That's not interesting for anybody. And like you said, that is not how this works at all.
No, it really isn't. But, you know, again, if it's anything, I'm always willing to listen, right? It's like the T. Higgins talk. I'll always pick up the phone. Okay. I don't know if I'm going to say yes. I hope you're prepared to make me an offer that I can't refuse. But I'll listen if it's anything. I mean, I can just warn Zach Taylor before anything starts. Hey, I'm going to do this because this dude's giving me $2 million to do this. So prepare your answer and then do it. Send it to the guy, collect my check, and we all move on amicably.
Yeah, you got to get that check first. What are you, some kind of amateur out here? You're going to do the whole thing and you're like, okay, sir, where's my $2 million? I just threw away my job.
All right. So maybe I shouldn't be the business guy for this podcast, Mark. I heard
the point. Yeah, exactly. The Rock's going to say, hey, talk about the XFL and I'll give you $2 million at the end of the season. And it's just going to tank our show. We're not getting that check from The Rock. You probably weren't even talking to The Rock. You got catfished by a potential podcast sponsor.
Okay. I want to switch it over to you here, Mark. Where are you out next? Are you on the road or are you where are you at next? What do you got going on?
Okay, so I got to look this up. Okay, so I'm local still for a couple things in March. I've got a show March 5th in Covington, Kentucky. This will be out. Yeah, so right. That's Tuesday, March 5th with our friend Josh Sneed. Joke Jim, it's a new material
Josh
show.
Josh S.
Yeah, with Josh S from the comments. That is a new joke show that we're starting at Madison Live. So it's in Covington. So that'll be like a shorter set and a way laid back. This is a soft launch. So it'll be kind of a real laid back feel for that. March 8th, I'm doing some show at a brewery or something near Xavier in the Norwood area.
Listerman?
It's not Listerman. I should have looked up the name of it. And then... I'm out of town for most of April. But if you're listening to this in other cities, of course, there's people that live all over the world that listen to Bengals Talk. Let's see. April 6th is my next big headlining show in the tri-state area at Commonwealth Sanctuary. That's going to be a really fun one. And then April 11th through 14th at the St. Charles Funny Bone, if you live in Missouri. And April 19th and 20th at the Dayton Funny Bone with our friend Josh S. And then I've got a bunch of other dates. I'm going to South Carolina, Iowa, Columbus, Lexington, Charleston, South Carolina. That stuff is all, I think, on sale now. And there'll be some other dates coming up, too. So, yeah, hopefully we get a lot of people from this new podcast that starts driving ticket sales on the road. That'd be great.
That's it. Here we go. MarkShalafo.com. You can get all kinds of good stuff.
You can just reach out to me personally and I'll tell you all the information that you need.
I'll just put your phone number here on this bottom ticker for people to just send you texts and questions and you know, thoughts about clowns.
Yeah, I'll take all your clown hot takes.
you got any bits you're working on and you want to workshop something with me here?
Okay, so I do want to talk to you about this because you are a dad as well. I know that your kids are a little bit younger. Your oldest is like 7, 8-ish, that neighborhood?
About to turn 7. We're working on the party.
What's the party theme?
Urban Air.
Oh, okay. That's fun.
Hey, Urban Air, love you. If you have any interest in, if you want to be a sponsor for lots of people with kids, we're going to talk about kid life, Urban Air here, right over here in Rookwood. So that's she's demanded it. She's been to a number of birthday parties there. And that's where we've fallen a bit because last year I had her sold on going to 50 West and we had an awesome party at 50 West. All the parents got to drink while the kids played in the sand.
That's great.
For 2 hours. Shout out to Optimistic Bobby Slattery for hooking us up with one of their little gazebo areas. It was incredible. And now we got to go to Urban Air and watch all the bouncing happen and be like, don't go through there. So can't quite drink as much. So that's not as good as the 50 West setup for the parents, which is really what this is all about.
Also, from that same standpoint, if you run another, little kid birthday spot, like a Scene 75 or some arcade, Dave and Buster's, and you want to sponsor the podcast, we'll move Paul's party. We will, break some hearts of little girls and they'll go wherever you want if the money is right. So, get to us before the parties start. I've got my oldest is about to turn 11. Our party is Newport Aquarium because she's ocean obsessed. So I don't, again, if they want to get on board, throw us some money.
Let's go.
Or if the zoo wants us to go there instead, reach out. But we got dragged into that. But she is a fifth grader, right? So she's turning 11. She's in fifth grade. So I'm working on this joke. And if we have to take this out of the podcast, we can. But her fifth grade class just recently got the puberty talk, right? In school. Uh-huh. They divide them girls, boys. Here's my problem with it. The gym teacher is the one that gave the talk. The gym, you can't give the silliest teacher the most serious job, the most serious conversation to the guy that shows up in sweatpants. But the joke that I'm working on, at least, is like, imagine being that parent that skipped that email, right? Like yeah. if that's one of the emails you just, because schools will send you a million emails all the time. And imagine missing that one where all of a sudden your kid comes home from school and you're just like, hey, buddy, how was school today? And he's like, oh, it was great. Mr. Johnson taught me about my changing body. You'd be like, oh wait, what? Okay, let's talk about that some more.
Well, I feel like this does happen, and I don't know what the qualifications are for the gym teacher that ends up in some of these, other than like, we really need to kind of give him something else to do. You know,
I know. It's just so
wild. Have something else that makes his present, like, it just feels like if we're gonna pay him the salary that we're going to, it's gotta provide us more. And then everyone said, well, no one wants to talk to him about the sex stuff.
Yeah, and nobody wants to do that. So right. Yeah, so I hope that it's that, right? Like, it's all right. Yes. Here's the terrible, awkward thing. Let's make him do it. He gets to play dodgeball all day anyway. So let's make him do something uncomfortable and not like he volunteered for it. Or he's like, yeah, that's what I want to do. Get some extra credit here. So I'm going to be working on a joke about that. So if you come out to Commonwealth Sanctuary April 6th or go on the road, I'll tell that joke in Iowa or Missouri or whatever. We'll hang out afterwards. And, I'm sure it'll be a good bit eventually.
Yeah. Well,
do you read all the emails from school?
There's too many. I know that now my wife definitely does. So I know that they will get read. So I don't feel like I have to read all of them. So if I skip over a few on a busy day, but there's a lot. And then Cincinnati Public School has this thing where they have all of your information, obviously. So they have your phone number, your email. So you will get, if there's anything, you'll get a text, a call, which goes like to a voicemail machine, recorded machine half the time, and an email that show up about whatever. And it's not like always important information. It's like, hey, it's Hispanic Heritage Month, everybody. It's like, man, you can't be blowing up three forms of communication just to tell me that needs to be more serious. Like, hey, school's out early, your kid's standing here by himself. Like, I feel like that should be for the three-pronged attack. Emails are fine. We get to all of them.
Although I kind of like that. The more I hear you talk about this, the more I think we should be implementing this for the podcast. Anytime that there's a new episode, you get a phone call, you get an email, somebody knocks on your door. Hey, there's a Hooday light out there. You want to hear about clowns? Click this link. You know, that's what we need. This is a new podcast. We got to get
this. Is it. We've got to be aggressive. I'm going to start directly calling everybody that subscribes to this, to the Growler, is what I'm going to do. I'm going to directly call you, thank you, and let you know anytime there's a new episode coming out.
That would be fun. We get let's start a newsletter and a text sign up thing where we can just really for the super fans, they're going to get to hear from you in a lot of different ways.
I love it. Let's wrap it up with a little bit of, we got one more piece of dad life here. What do you got?
This is troubling me this week because it's just finally the calendar has turned. We're now into March. And so what troubles me is I've got three daughters and all of them are playing soccer and I am the head coach of all three teams. So I kind of agreed to this before I really thought about it, before I had my spring touring schedule and all that kind of stuff. So now that I'm looking at it, it feels like an absolute nightmare. Three teams, three girls rec soccer teams.
I don't know how you got wrangled into this. Like at some point you got to draw the line. Is that because one kid is going to be offended if you're coaching the other two and not them, and they're clearly viewed as lesser than at that point? Did you have to judge? You should judge it by their talent. Be like, look, you're just less talented than your sister.
Okay, so one is just starting. So the four-year-old obviously is the least talented. So that's just four-year-old kids. I could get rid of that team immediately. So now I'm down to an almost 11-year-old and an eight-year-old. Eight-year-old's probably the better athlete, but I've coached the 11-year-old longer. That's where it gets trickier, I guess.
I think as long as you let whoever you're not going to coach know that you're no longer invested in their life, it works out. I think it's okay.
There's no cuts in rec coaching, but that would be fun if I got to cut one of my own kids. I am not going to coach. I really went down through the tape and I analyzed your potential, your talent, and you just didn't match up to your sister. Sorry. You get to go play for a weird neighbor, you know?
You know what's so I ended up in this situation actually, where I was willing to be a coach for first grade baseball. It's mixed at that point. Age is still just a mix of girls and boys, and there's only 10 kids that are even signed up for this team, and four different dads signed up and clicked the assistant coach box. None of us clicking the head coach box, and an email was sent from the director of the baseball program for all grade levels that said, just trying to get all our head coaches lined up. Looks like all four of you guys clicked assistant. If you guys could just kind of hash out whoever's going to be the head coach.
How did that shake out?
The email sits there over through the weekend. It was like a giant game of email thread chicken of no one responding, of a lot of people like, I can definitely get through the weekend and claim I didn't see this. And let's just, maybe somebody else will step up and really want to do it. It's like, how long is this going to go? I feel like it could go on through the baseball season if we really tested it, you know? And I ended up being the one that stood up and took it on. So, congratulations to me. And immediately everybody else like, oh yeah, that's great. That sounds fantastic. Yeah, I'd love to help you in any way possible. Like everybody was on board, found that email after that. Well, I appreciated it though. Like I actually kind of wanted to do it. But there was definitely a part of me that was like, but if somebody else really wants to do it,
that's in. Even
better. And then, but yeah, that it just kind of sat there. So it's cool. So now I'm in charge, whatever that even means for
baseball head coach. That's intense.
Look at me.
Yeah. You're going to get a whole different perspective. Everyone's going to have high expectations from you being a sports guy. Like he works in sports. He's going to be a great coach.
Yeah, that's not true. I'm just hoping to, I'm hoping that we're able to field a team for most games. And I definitely want everyone to have their own walk-up music. That's really all my objective is at this point.
Yeah, just cool walk-up music for everybody. What if everybody just uses the podcast music as their walk-up?
There it is. Really, that's what we need to
get
do.
It out there. Yeah.
Just to keep it in the mix. Get people talking about it. That's it. That's all right. That's my name. Writing that
and
down.
And next notes, time you want those
notes for next show, use walk-up music must be the Who Dey Light theme song. I love
it. And make these assistant coaches become sponsors of the podcast. Like, hey, you guys need a head coach? Well, I need somebody to buy some average. What line of work are you in? Do you work in the XFL with The Rock? Because we want you. We want your money. And then we'll coach your kid, okay? But you just got to make it a little bit equal here.
Love it. I love it. I'm on board. Mark, we did it.
Yeah, one in the books. I feel good about it.
Show one in the books. All right, this is going to be these are going to be coming to you every Friday. So we'll be going through whatever the news is at that point and your questions are. So make sure you send us those questions, send them, to Mark. Mark, where should they specifically email you since you're on Twitter looking for the negativity? Where should they specifically send them to?
They can find me on Twitter, which I'm only on for the negativity since I mostly post stuff on Instagram and Facebook, that kind of stuff. Also, you know, my email is easy enough to find. So find me on Twitter, find my email through my website, send me all the stuff you want me to ambush Paul with, all your questions, and we will have that for next week.
Love
keep it. Keep on rolling.
Love it. And you can send them to me as well. PDaner@theathletic.com. You know where it's at. You know where to find us. And hopefully you know where to find the podcast. Make sure you're going and subscribing to the feed so you get this. You get Balds Don't Lie. You get PB&J. You get all of us every week keeping the Mo Egger and the Jay Morris. And so pumped to be back with Jay, which is great. And so we're going to have all of that. So make sure you're subscribed. TheGrowlerPodcast.com. You can find the links here around all of this stuff in show notes, etc. You can find us on iTunes, wherever you listen to your podcasts. All right. Thanks, everybody, for listening, and we'll talk to you next time. Have a good one, everybody.